Now, through one thing and another, I find myself back talking about the Emperor. But in fairness, I think this is a good one, not least because soon we may have some clarity that will warrant a follow-up. Now, for those of you who have thought for the longest time that I were in fact a traitor, a heretic, a cursed spreader of anti-Imperium propaganda who sought to turn believers into the condemned, twist you into followers of the Dark Gods, believers in the primordial truth, you're not 100% wrong. But at the same time, to keep those irritating inquisitors off my back, I'm here to tell you, any previous heretical discussion was, of course, a test, simply a test. Because today, I wanted to continue on with some speculations about the Emperor. Because with the soon-to-be-released final novels in the Siege of Terror series, I hope it may bring to us some clarity. With that said, I don't hold any delusion that this is going to wrap up everything neatly, because that's simply not how 40k works, but I do hope it could help put to rest a couple of questions that have been hanging over with the complex tapestry of the older and newer lore descriptions around this time. Now, just to note from the outset, the concept of the Star Child is a contentious one, because of its origins way back in the early lore of 40k, so much so that it's often just dismissed out of hand as a stupid concept, or even that R word. However, I am here to tell you that if you're not aware of it, this line of thinking is firmly back on the table. It has been re-established in one of the newest books documenting the Imperium in M41, and thus it is worthy of discussion, in fact several books. It certainly can no longer be dismissed as old stupid lore that is irrelevant. So I will take the opportunity once again to remind that just because old lore has not been mentioned for some time does not mean it has been passively retconned. Because firstly, it's long established that in 40k even the most cursory of side notes can develop into full-blown lore events, and second, because retcon is not a thing in 40k. And please do at me about that in the comments so that I can ignore them. And please do go and see my video where I speak about it specifically, it's linked below. The final battle of the Emperor and Horus has long been the foundation of 40k. It's one of the most embedded events for the verse, and it's something people learn very early on. At face value, it's very straightforward. The end of the heresy, the Emperor teleports to Horus's ship and they fight a brutal battle to the death, resulting in Horus being completely eradicated from existence and the Emperor mortally wounded and then interred on the Golden Throne, where he remains for some 10,000 years to the current period in M41. These events, though, when viewed through a wider lens, leave us with interesting questions, such as if the Emperor did know how the situation would turn out and willingly faced Horus, knowing he would be unable to win, what does that say about him, his intentions, and his state of mind? What were the specifics of the battle? Did a Terminator, Custodes, or OLP interrupt Horus and enable the Emperor to reach a state of mind such that he could obliterate Horus? Was the Emperor holding back while fighting Horus at all? Was Horus's fate actually predetermined by the Chaos Gods and he was merely a pawn? How was the Emperor able to overcome Horus, who we presume to have been empowered by all those Chaos Gods at the time, acting as their avatar in the Materium? Those two things line up. If they pulled away and reduced their power to allow the Emperor a brief window of opportunity, why would they do that? Was this a clever play by one of the Chaos Gods to weaken the others in the Great Game? Or was it that they understood collectively that Chaos would be more powerful in the long term should Horus fall right there? Which brings us to the issue of things such as the Cabal. It's such a brief moment in the entire history of 40k in the Imperium, but the details we can discover and learn from this could grant us a lot of perspective, albeit I must admit probably quite speculative still. Last thing I want to note in this intro, I don't really want to drill down too heavily on the Cabal today. It's a pretty broad and fragmented topic, and for all its details, it can be summed up relatively neatly. Plus, not gonna lie, I didn't want to cross-ref it all. Plus, we've got other things to look at. Because in honesty, the main question is, did the Emperor willingly walk into his own state of perpetual death, both knowingly and willingly? And if so, why? And why that is the main question for today will become clear. To the many billions of Imperial citizens, it is of course self-evident that the Emperor of Mankind is the true God of humanity. The saviour of all, the protector, the golden light that will lead us all into the new golden age for humanity, rebuilding the vast galactic empire, exterminating the Xenos threats, purging the traitors, and most importantly consigning the foul and abhorrent entities of the warp, including the so-called Chaos Gods, to permanent and eternal oblivion. How much any of that is true is entirely unknown. We do know that within the Inquisition there are many schools of thought on what the Emperor is and what he is doing. Now, I've looked at these in several previous videos, so I won't list through them all here today, but it's also linked at the end. Within the context of what we're thinking about here, we should at least recall that some inquisitorial ideologies consider that everything the Emperor has chosen to do, up to and including the end of the heresy and the time since, were all known to him. That is to say that he knew exactly what was coming and how it would play out in the aftermath. That everything is unfolding as it should, and is all part of his supreme grand plan for humanity. These are the Puritan Inquisitors known as the Amalathians. This perspective gives them significant power, because by following this line of thinking, it means that anything they may choose to do is also part of the Emperor's ultimate plan. Now, some may view that more cynically than others, some may practice it in the most complete and sincere definitions, while others simply abuse it to rationalize and enable their horrific personal desires. But this is nothing unusual. Absolute power corrupts absolutely, and so forth. Inquisitors, as a faction, despite their differing views at a fundamental level, all believe they're doing the Emperor's work. But in the case of the Amalathians, it's more that they would see themselves acting with true moral impunity, because in one respect they may consider that their decisions are predetermined, and that's where I could spin this off into linking it with the whole theories of time from Dark Origins, but maybe not today. Then we have this other interesting and relevant perspective of the so-called Illuminati and the Sensei. This is the whole Star Child theory. Now, these are not members of the Inquisition, these are something else entirely, and I should note that it has been barely mentioned since the third edition, and existed within books that are generally frowned upon, like the Inquisition War trilogy, for example. That's a whole other kettle of fish. But so many for the longest time considered any mention of this Star Child theory to be fanciful nonsense. Old lore that was muddled by the mists of time, and since its early beginnings was barely acknowledged at all. Until now. In both the Dark Imperium and Throne of Light series, which have been documenting the most recent events for the Imperium and Gilliman's Indomitus Crusade, which includes the Psychic Awakening, which saw a massive increase in the birth of human psychers across the Imperium, this has meant a lot more work for the Sisters of Silence and also more fuel for the Emperor. But essentially, as a result of the Psychic Awakening, the legend of the Star Child has been reignited. More specifically, it breaks down like this. A few years into the Indomitus Crusade, visions of a golden infant interspersed with flashes of a radiant being rising from a throne of light began to be reported across astropathic relay networks, spreading out from the segmentum solar. Over time, the images became clearer, and many began to interpret this with the legend of the Star Child. As is the case with different ideologies of the Inquisition, this concept is deeply problematic for many. And while some seek to enable it to come into being, others fear what it could mean and so seek to prevent it. Others, such as the Servants of Chaos, are actively hostile to the possibility of the Emperor being reborn for obvious reasons. And this is where it gets a lot confusing and very convoluted. This Illuminati, or whatever name they wish to operate under, in Throne of Light they're simply called the Cult of the Star Child. These religious cults await the birth of the so-called Star Child, that's the second coming of the new man, the Emperor. To who they refer to as the Sensei Emperor. The Sensei are the immortal, true sons of the Emperor, sired by him during his earlier life amongst humanity. His real sons, essentially. They're said to, of course, hold very powerful gifts, some psychic, some null, some just masterful swordsmen. And as I said, this is very old lore, but one mention in the third edition, which I should note was a pretty good edition for fleshing out lore, especially its rulebook, describes how in 997 M41, Inquisitor Fortes reported to have discovered a cult known as the Cult of the Star Child, led by a self-proclaimed sensei claiming to be the Emperor's sons. Inquisitor rejected this due to their affiliation with Abhumans and the Eldari, and instead suspected that they may be some kind of Zinchian cult. They were purged with all but a few of those sensei killed. Now, the cult who are focused on enabling the return of the new man can go by whatever name they want to, but their existence is a lot more vague and in doubt than anything else, especially in the modern Imperium. It's possible they even had connections with members of the Inquisition, which makes some sense because they have beliefs that could align with some inquisitorial ideologies. But this Illuminati are supposed to be called as such because they are said to have been illuminated through having experienced a pretty traumatic event. that is a demonic possession. They're said to have emerged from it through salvation, and this is the price of membership into their group, to be possessed by a demon, and in doing what seems the impossible, exorcising the demon from their body through sheer willpower alone. It's rare, if ever, for a demon host individual to survive possession, but somehow the members of this cult are said to have achieved this, though undoubtedly this would not be authorized or approved by any within the more Puritan elements of the Inquisition. So in being illuminated to the terror, the horror of chaos, they believe themselves to have gained a new level of understanding of chaos, which is likely fairly reasonable to agree with. Plus, they consider themselves subsequently immune to its temptations and corruption. They become untouchable, so as to be able to now fight the darkness in a larger perspective. For whatever reason, they have been said to associate with Eldar Harlequins and to have had access to their Black Library. This is the Eldari's vast library of knowledge, secured deep in the Webway. It's the collection of their complete cultural knowledge and that of the galaxy, and as such the Illuminati understand the fall of the Eldar and seek to prevent the same from happening to humanity. Their experience and knowledge is said to have emboldened them with an ideological perspective that perhaps only the Emperor himself could equally have shared, and they're supposedly similarly devoted to mankind's preservation, with their ultimate goal being to bring about the rebirth of the Emperor of Man. They realise that the Emperor is disintegrating steadily in both body and mind, and that there will come a time where the Emperor has deteriorated to the point where his will finally breaks. Humanity without the Emperor, of course, means the ultimate oblivion, as we will fall to chaos. And so to prevent this, the Illuminati plan to rejuvenate the Emperor by sacrificing his descendants, the Sensei. At the moment the Emperor finally falls, through yet another act of mass sacrifice, the Emperor can be reborn as this Sensei Emperor, to again lead humanity directly. This cult have been said to be influencing events so as to pave the way for the Emperor's rebirth, gathering together also this Sensei, protecting them from the persecution of the Inquisition, such as the Ordo Malleus, who know all about them, considering them to be very obviously dangerous heretics, and are therefore devoted to wiping out the Illuminati and the Sensei whenever they come across them. This is just one example of many so-called Inquisition wars which can be ongoing across the Imperium for millennia. And it's also an example of why all the horrors raging across the galaxy, in some respects the Imperium remains in a grumbling, periodically actionable state of cold civil war for the past 10,000 years. And as some have noted, the Imperium and humanity actually spends a lot more time fighting amongst themselves than they do the Xenos, the traitors, the heretics and the powers that would be, despite how often those are presented as the core primary threats. The primary threats to destabilize humanity is actually itself. But most importantly, the Illuminati believe that when the Emperor is reborn, he will wage a final battle against chaos, either through direct war in the warp, or even his rebirth creating some kind of neutralizing effect which will simply rebalance the warp back to a peaceful or mostly calm state. Other theories are said to consider that while the Emperor is dealing with things in the warp, humanity will be left to fight the final ultimate battle across the galaxy, to regain control of its borders, with humanity obviously emerging victorious. But all of this remains wildly speculative. The current ecclesiarchy in M41 has begun to preach that the Emperor is stirring, and their belief had some evidence to support it. Miracles have been seen more and more, the ghosts of the loyal faithful dead rising, Imperial saints appearing to aid exhausted armies, readings of the Imperial Emperor's Tarot making the difference between disaster and triumph, even reports of the mysterious Legion of the Damned becoming more frequent than was ever seen before. When Gilliman travelled, the warp storms stilled, strangely allowing his armies to make rapid headway. A number of strange coincidences and odd phenomena reached the Primarch's ears. He even witnessed bizarre events himself that he couldn't account for. Things that he would discount at first, but as time went on, he was unable to do so, and became disquieted. All across the Imperium were people having claimed to have been visited or guided by the Emperor than had ever seen before. Many of these were, of course, burned as heretics, but in other cases their words and presence provided succour to the desperate and encouraged those who had no hope of salvation from other quarters to fight back against mankind's enemies. Most critically, all of these seemingly direct actions by the God Emperor have led to an immense outpouring of faith throughout the galaxy, which has only then further invigorated this cycle of emergence. However, there is one small problem, which is that unfortunately it's been noted that heretical interpretations paralleled a belief in the Star Child promulgated by a cult which had been destroyed some years before the Great Rift opened. So the destruction of those attempting to enable the Star Child is somewhat problematic. It also depends upon if you choose to believe or not if these are the Illuminati that have been destroyed, or merely those who heard stories of the Star Child and formed their own cults. The truth of these matters is really unknown, but it does raise for us this interesting prospect of whether or not the followers of the Star Child concept were actually destroyed or continue to exist somewhere out there in the galaxy. In some respects, it could be considered irrelevant. The existence of the Sensei is more strange and not something really spoken to. So just how this may or may not play into things is an open question. But the other question can be, are these followers of this Star Child concept necessary at all? Are they really relevant to what's happening, or is it just the Emperor is doing his own thing and they happen to be just following along and they're not really going to influence it whatsoever? I think what's more relevant perhaps is this description stating that a few years into the Indomitus Crusade, visions of this golden infant interspersed with flashes of a radiant being rising from a throne of light began to be reported across the astropathic relay networks. Because this really raises the possibility that the Emperor is starting to stir in the warp, not dissimilarly to how the Chaos Gods were originally born. Now, Slaanesh came into being with one massive psychic explosion so powerful it near destroyed the Eldar and tore a hole through the galaxy, but that's not how we believe the other Chaos Gods came into being, for they became sentient, powerful gods through a more calm, steady coalescing in the warp. Coalescing is your word for today. Which is, in honesty, how the Emperor sounds like he is reappearing, if indeed it is the Emperor. This is where we get more into my own speculation, and so likely best to begin a new chapter. So the very simple concept here is that over 10,000 years, the Emperor has been steadily becoming empowered through the sacrifices and worship made to him. So much so that with the birth of the Psychic Awakening and all of that extra faith that's been coming forward, he has finally begun to emerge in the warp, or at least that is how it appears to be. Now this differs from the followers of the Star Child cult and the believers in some other ideologies who think that the Emperor needs to be reborn through actions or directly into a physical mortal shell, or by some other process. The Star Child cult believed that the Emperor's rebirth would be very much an instantaneous thing, where his body on the Golden Throne dies, and at that moment somehow their sacrifices would empower him as he's reborn anew in the warp. My personal speculation is that this is not entirely correct. We can't be 100% sure even if that's what they believe, because I believe that what is happening has the potential to be more troubling, and it raises more disturbing questions as you go along. From here on, we have to presume also that the Emperor is slowly coalescing into some new form in the warp as a Star Child, new man, whatever you want to call it. But essentially you have to assume that's what's happening, because otherwise the rest of today doesn't really make sense. Also, as I noted, these descriptions of the golden infant, some throne of light, those come directly from fairly primary lore material released very recently. So it has legitimacy. It's not some random theory from 20 years ago that can be just pushed aside. These are descriptions that are happening right now. Several questions come to mind though at this juncture. The question of, did the Emperor plan this from the outset? Did he intend to become a figure of worship, knowing that he would be interred on the throne, knowing that he would be steadily fueled by psychers, knowing that he would emerge 10,000 years later at the most critical time for humanity? Essentially, are the Amalathian Inquisitors correct? Is this all part of the Emperor's grand plan, and that things are unfolding exactly as they should? I honestly think it's at least possible, if not very plausible. When we consider the many references from the Emperor, he can often appear quite, depending on who he's speaking with, more enlightened or not. And then you have the shifting views of those who have known him in life outside of being the Emperor. Layered onto that, you have his questionable actions at the inception of the Imperium, the brutal slaughter of humans who might stand against him during unification, the execution of the Thunder Warriors, the cold indifference to his Primarchs, the willful disregard for the genetic integrity of the Astartes during the Crusade, and on and on. And then of course there's other factors like Malkador, the conversations we've learned in stories such as The Board Is Set, the First Lord of the Imperium, Malkador saying the Emperor wasn't the Emperor until he met me, and all the conversations we've had about Malkador. Now, I'm not going to rake over all of those specifically today because we've done that. I think the point I want to make is that simply it's unclear what the Emperor's intentions were. It remains very subjective. Everybody will interpret and feel differently about this. It's not bias, it's just you can't know yet. I still think that the pure salvation for humanity may not be the whole picture here. The emergence of the Star Child and what it could mean certainly, though, raises the prospect that the Emperor, in fact, knew exactly what he was doing, and that perhaps he may very well have intended to be interred on the throne all along, that he wanted to become a figure of worship, and that the heresy was all part of the plan. We get glimpses of these possibilities, but with the potential for the Emperor's rebirth, with the psychic awakening, and the seeming future-proofing of the Golden Throne and Astronomicon, it seems very possible the Emperor set out to become the true God of humanity, right from the start. Before we jump further ahead into the last few pieces, I say last few, other half, I feel I should make some reference to the Cabal, because it seems relevant, if not at least to be just an adjacent note in response to this idea of the Star God cult, the Illuminati, or whatever they want to be. Basically, these small factions all attempting to force some kind of result in the galactic struggle. So the Cabal are basically a group who have claimed to have fought against Chaos, or in their terms, the Primordial Annihilator, longer than the existence of evolved humanity, a description which in and of itself is somewhat problematic. The Cabal are this strange group of alien species, seemingly all with different origins, some even appearing to be just energy-based entities. Some of their collective species may well have been exterminated by the Emperor's Great Crusade. They also notably contain members of the Eldar. They don't have a permanent home position and instead wander the galaxy. When they do hold somewhere for a short time, these are designated as halting sites, and they may adjust a chosen site of a world using advanced geoforming abilities. The Cabal also appear to have had a high level of mastery over atmospheric alteration technology and the ability to extend or renew life, which makes sense given their war against an enemy that has no concept of time. Their principal ability as a group was that of farsight, much like some psykers, the Eldar, and the Emperor. They're able to see somewhat into the future, or a possible future, or the predetermined future. Just as the Emperor may have been aware of, they too foresaw that Horus would ignite this galactic-level civil war using the powers of Chaos, and that this was an inevitability. So why is this group relevant for us? Well, it's only relevant in noting that they provide some substance to the argument that the Emperor may well have known that his outright victory would have been more destructive than for things to play out as they did. In fact, the Cabal's foreseen outcome of the heresy was as happened, the Emperor giving his life to kill Horus, whereby he would become locked upon the Golden Throne. But the Cabal believed this was actually the wrong path to take, for they saw this would lead humanity into stagnation, decay, corruption, and the disintegration of the human empire, which is, of course, what has happened, thus enabling the powers of Chaos, who were heavily invested in humanity, to grow their influence and power, until finally, after many thousands of years of misery, the galaxy would finally be consumed by Chaos, which does seem to be how it's playing out, and there's even suggestion that this is how Chaos wanted it to play out, that Chaos actually even wanted Horus to be killed at the end of the heresy. The Cabal sought to prevent this from happening by forcing an alternative path, if you believe that there are alternative paths to be taken in the 40k verse, where Horus would emerge victorious, and the small piece of his true self that remained within him would stir such conflict that he would end up essentially just imploding and waging a war against traitors in basically a doubled-down civil war, a final Armageddon. This would mean the extermination of the human species, but the Cabal believed with Chaos so invested in humanity, they would ultimately be extinguished with it. They also are the primary cause for the Alpha Legion of Astartes to turned to the side of Horus. John Grammaticus also demonstrated to the Primarchs their foreseen outcomes for humanity, and so they decided ultimately it was a better thing to see the destruction of chaos and humanity than a grinding slow death for human civilization, which would result in the still remaining existence of chaos. However, there are complex issues with this whole situation. Namely, did the Cabal misunderstand their own visions and through their actions create a self-fulfilling prophecy that by engaging with the Alpha Legion, they accidentally implemented the future for humanity they had sought to prevent? This is one of the complex problems when using visions of the future. By trying to force something to happen, you could inadvertently enable an alternative situation by not seeing the complete picture, which is what appears to have happened. This outcome is, of course, why the Alpha Legion are still branded traitors to the Imperium and the Emperor, and while their true agenda is not known, it seems unlikely they're playing some complex, long game here. However, if the Emperor did return, I could imagine it being plausible that they could be forgiven and rejoin the Imperium. Maybe. Then, of course, we have the Eldar Farseer Eldrad Ulthran, who has more recently even been offering his services and insight to Gilliman, but he also came to see the Cabal as a threat to the galaxy. He saw their plan to destroy humanity, and in doing so destroy chaos, as a pointless sacrifice that was essentially far too simplistic and also just misplaced. Eldrad stands as one of the most powerful Farseers among the Eldar, and he believes that the Eldar must in fact help the Imperium to be victorious, for the ultimate survival of the galaxy. The Eldar being far too few in number to achieve any serious resolution of the problems with chaos and its continued expansion. Although again, depending on which Eldar faction you speak to, not all agree with him, especially those of the Inari. But by M32, Eldrad had waged a campaign of extermination against the Cabal, and they're believed to now no longer exist. So this is another kind of weird factional thing, where possibly they're still around, but probably not. I just felt it was worth mentioning the Cabal here because their actions demonstrate not everyone agrees with the Emperor's way of doing things. Now admittedly, they're not some breakaway human group, but many of the Emperor's perpetuals chose to just disengage from humanity in many respects, and there are many other groups and factions who actively attempt to shape galactic events. As Eldrad had come to suspect though, it appears that the Cabal did not appreciate the full picture, and that if the Emperor is indeed returning slowly, humanity may still need the help of the Eldar to weather this current strife of the Cicadrix Maledictum and the Dark Imperium up to the point where the Emperor can actually enable a successful re-establishing of the Imperium, essentially. Now, as much as I know, some people dislike it. Sometimes things are not clear-cut. Sometimes things are open-ended, unresolved, or of course the realization that two things can in fact be true at the same time. The nature of the Emperor's agenda is one such question, and it's a problematic aspect of this rebirth theory because it calls into question the nature of the Emperor. Because if we're thinking about his ultimate goals, being born again into the warp is a tricky one, not least because it makes us to consider, were all the struggles of humanity throughout the Crusade and the Heresy and the 10,000 years since all in the service of his ascension to becoming a literal god of the warp? When discussing these things, the Emperor and the Imperium are often given very generous boundaries of moral relativism, in the sense that terrible actions are simply necessary for the greater good. It's often basically presented that this is just how things are, and no further action or questions are required, which is very much the default response from the Imperium as well. But if the ultimate goal all along was the Emperor being reborn in the warp, more powerful than ever, can the sacrifices made by humanity, not just in war and service, but also literal human sacrifice through the Golden Throne and Astronomicon, be balanced out? Can these things be aligned as still being good? Or do we start to consider, maybe the Emperor was not the only way forward. Maybe he actually is a questionable character. At what point do you start to call it and go, you know what, maybe we need to think about this. Maybe we need to turn back before it's too late. I think there might be a few people who certainly start to realise at this point that maybe he should have been stopped somewhere along the way. But that's really a whole other question. I've often speculated loosely and wondered about those several human civilizations that survived post-Dark Age of Technology. They weathered the Age of Strife, they retained a lot of technology from that time. They did not share the Emperor's galactic vision of human subjugation. And I've always thought, and I've often asked, what if they had begun to rise up more ahead of time and created an entire section of the galaxy that was far more technologically advanced? When the Crusade encountered them, they often actually struggled quite significantly against these civilizations, but the Emperor just had far too much on his side, too many legions to destroy these worlds. But imagine if, similar to the Tau, for example, they had managed to maintain an area of their own territory, if they had been able to basically build on the technology that had survived the Dark Age of Technology, perhaps not entirely dissimilar to the Votan. Maybe at this point they then could have teamed up with, say, the Eldar, the Tau, the Votan, created some kind of alliance which fought against the Imperium. It would have been very interesting, and arguably far more constructive in the bigger picture than the Emperor was for humanity, given the state of things in M41. But of course that didn't happen, but I think it requires us to consider, in admittedly a very basic way, as we don't have time for a philosophical thesis, how do we think about or define things such as good and bad? And that might sound too big of a concept, but moreover, we're thinking about it in terms of somebody like the Emperor, especially when you have entities such as the Chaos Gods, who are often viewed as these abhorrent, completely morally devoid evil entities. But in many ways, they're really only shades away from some of the actions of the Emperor, quite honestly. Especially in how the Imperium, ever since unification, has had almost no trouble at all engaging in acts of mass execution, genocide, ignoring wholesale human suffering. Admittedly, not necessarily propagating it very actively, as Chaos may well do, but nonetheless, as I say, it's not many steps away. But is it even possible to make worthwhile moral applications to such an already hellish and morally ambiguous far future, as seen through the eyes of humanity who have evolved, at least socially, technologically, and culturally speaking, far beyond where we stand today? Humanity had reached that zenith period only to collapse in on itself to a point of near extinction, but somehow survived to awaken to the light of the Emperor. Thus, humanity managed to drag itself up out of the horror. It's fairly evident throughout the story of the Emperor that he takes decisions and actions that are questionable, morally grey, knowingly problematic. But where do we draw a qualifying line of good and bad and what exists between? We know that the Chaos Gods have other traits, Khorne with its sense of courage, martial power and honour, Tzeentch with ambition and seekers of knowledge, Nurgle's acceptance of entropy and rebirth, Slaanesh, creativity and pleasure. Although I also often think that while these things are true to a degree, it's very rarely seen in a practical sense that we would understand. These traits really only seem plausible in an almost theoretical or very general sense, almost definitions that are merely a gateway to becoming a follower of the Chaos path. And to give an example, offhand there's often references to these traits being attributed to the Chaos Gods, but it's not often you see a Khorne Berserker and think, wow, what an honourable fellow as he chews through a bunch of civilians with twin chain axes, or you're seeing a crew of Slaaneshi demons turning someone who's still alive inside out and using their ligaments to play some whimsical melody. And as you watch all this, you muse to yourself, you know what, that is so creative, I never would have thought of doing that. Tzeentch being attributed to naked ambition, but this just usually translates to disgusting sociopathic human seeks power by any means necessary, and all of the horrifying excesses and suffering that comes with that. So I think in this regard we can question, was the Emperor considerably better? The knee-jerk reaction would obviously be yes, what a stupid question. And I'm not going to lie, I think they are markedly different. But then again, cast our minds back to the Emperor doing things quite casually, such as forcibly subjugating billions to your cult on pain of death or worse, scouring worlds, and then in my opinion, knowingly creating a religion based on you as its deity that would later lead to 10,000 years of grinding human persecution and suffering. I feel like it's not a wildly unreasonable position to take that the Emperor is not a good person. Still, who's grading what's considered morally acceptable or disgusting, laudable or abhorrent, constructive or unconstructive for humanity as a whole? And why does any of this even matter? Well, in one respect, perhaps not at all. In a galaxy as horrific as M30 to M41, clearly what will be will be. In another respect, though, it could matter a lot. especially if you care at all about how we differentiate ourselves from the traitors, the heretics, and the nightmares that exist in the warp, or what fate could ultimately befall humanity. These entities who exist in the warp that are seen by humanity as supremely destructive, abhorrent, evil even, do not necessarily see themselves as such. Much like so many innocent civilians who are literally crushed and broken to pieces by the Astartes from the Unification Wars onwards, likely also did not see themselves as acting against the greater interests of humanity. Very often they just wanted to be left alone, and whilst witnessing their loved ones being butchered by gigantic superhuman monsters who seemed basically invincible and completely apathetic to their suffering, in many cases even actively relishing the brutality they were engaged in, they very likely did not look upon the Emperor as their salvation. Later, when the heresy came, many of the Emperor's own came to question his position. Let's take Mortarion as one example. He would come to consider how the cycles of life and death, decay and growth are the most natural states for the galaxy, the unstoppable march of entropy. Why attempt to deny this? Why not embrace it fully? Angron, so consumed by his rage and his suffering at the hands of humanity itself, the failure of the Emperor in his eyes, turned to the only truth and reality that existed for him, and in terms of facing an unavoidable reality, perhaps Magnus much the same. So for us to assume that any who might align themselves with the Chaos Powers are seen only as being wrong, evil, because humanity always believes itself to be right, seems really hypocritical. And again, no need to send that anonymous call to your local Inquisition or Arbites just yet, don't worry about it. My point is simply that it's all about perspectives. The Tyranids, for example, difficult really to ascribe emotional descriptions to them as being evil, monstrous they may be, but they're little more than highly evolved organisms looking to consume and maintain their existence, similarly the Orcs. The story of the Imperium and the Emperor are told, obviously, from the human perspective, but when we look at things from another view, it's not as clear as it may seem. Humanity sees evil in chaos because it's a reflection of the darkest aspects of the human soul and spirit, and so we project our own relative perspective onto them, and because it threatens the ordinary state of human existence, chaos seeks to destroy the default modus operandi of humanity, to distort it so that it may better reflect their own ways, their own truths and reality. So depending on your perspective, this is exactly what humanity does. Wherever it secures territory in the galaxy, it dominates and exterminates all who are not as they. What about the Eldar Maiden Worlds, the beautiful, serene, peaceful planets created by the Eldar millions of years ago? Humanity claimed many of these for themselves as paradise worlds or industrial worlds, and now should the Eldar appear, they're killed on sight. The Emperor in the Crusade slaughtered millions of humans who did not agree with the way of the Emperor, while the Xenos, many of whom were peaceful, butchered just because. Their planets seized, used to farm resources and empower the Imperium, i.e. the Emperor, just like how when Chaos forces transform a world, they use it to empower their specific benefactors. So if we're just talking about it in terms of morality, it's hard to really make a legitimate case for the Emperor as being any kind of moral leader for humanity. For goodness sake, even when his newly established government attempted to act on its own principles and laws that were sanctioned and created as part of the Emperor's new Imperium right after unification, the Imperium of Humanity, they were just shut down, investigated, stonewalled, even exiled. Why? Because it didn't align with the Emperor's agenda. It was just a farce. And so having to face the moral consequences of his actions exposed the extreme hypocrisy of the Emperor, and effectively undermined everything he claimed to be. Those who remembered humanity at this time, the true humanity, from before the collapse post-Dark Age of Technology, those few who remained, or their descendants, had the best intentions for humanity. They wanted to build something out of it, to create a new peaceful and constructive human civilization. What happened to them? They were either enlisted and exploited by the Emperor, or they were broken and killed by his minions. So again, not a rock-solid basis, really, for being a benevolent leader, or even a leader who had the best intentions for humanity from the beginning. In fairness, you might think, why is this relevant? Well, it is. It is relevant for me. Because I think if we're considering something as era-defining and power-shifting as the Emperor being reborn into the warp, we need to really consider the implications of this. Plus, I think the sacrifices made by humanity should be considered, along with additional questions like, did the Emperor speak to the Chaos Gods after using the warp portal on Moloch? Were any deals made? Why was he in such a rush to complete the Crusade? Why was he the Emperor only after meeting Malkador? Why were he and Malkador so convinced things would end in heresy? Was this all foretold, planned, deliberate? Will the Emperor eventually die and be reborn within the warp itself to wage this final ultimate war against the Dark Gods? Or is he just a wounded, some might say even defeated, being who came very close to achieving a new zenith for humanity but fell at the last hurdle? Or was it in fact all an extremely convoluted plan, so much so that it were far beyond the comprehension of all than perhaps Malkador? Was the Emperor's placement upon the Golden Throne in fact not a last desperate attempt to save his soul, even if it were believed to be by those around him at the time, but in fact a calculated plan, one that he knew to be a predetermined certainty? We'll talk about this again later, but why were the Astronomicon and the Golden Throne designed to have such massive capacity, enabling them to be powered by so many psychers from day one, as was observed to us by the Sisters of Silence, who, I will remind, themselves felt somewhat confused and uncomfortable at the prospect when they began to realise the scale and horror of what was in fact going to be involved in powering the Golden Throne and Astronomicon, that this was not going to be a one-off temporary situation. These are the Sisters of Silence, very loyal to the Emperor, and they were extremely uncomfortable with knowing what they were going to have to do. Not to mention the fact that they suddenly realized that these machines had been designed ahead of time as a permanent arrangement, one that has now been going on for some 10,000 years. This was a big sticking point. They were very uncomfortable about this. So was the Emperor being kept alive by the sacrifice of human psychers to power the Astronomicon, or were they being slaughtered to feed the insatiable appetite of a new emergent god in the warp? I would point out, not entirely dissimilarly to something like the Catan, and the Emperor, who has now for 10,000 years been coalescing to join the great game among the other gods and fight for ultimate supremacy. All of these questions drag me back to the Emperor and either his continued state of amorality or moral relativism. Essentially, his constant positioning of doing questionable, very ethically bad actions, but balanced with good intentions of the bigger picture. Basically saying, trust me, this is all in your best interests. But at some point, you have to say, there's a lot of trust that you have to give. Like, how far down the road do you go? At a very simplistic level, it could be boiled down to thought examples such as the classic, is the sacrifice of one innocent person worth the lives of many others? And then of course the Imperium scales this up to, is the daily sacrifice of thousands just for the Golden Throne and Astronomicon worth the lives of many billions across the galaxy? Now some would say immediately yes, but I think in all honesty, it's a more complex and challenging position to argue. Not least because these people are not even willing volunteers, they're usually rounded up by the Sisters of Silence, forcibly executed very painfully for the cause of the Imperium, which is pretty dark. So I'll say it again, I just think if we're going to consider the Emperor ascending to godhood, one has to surely question, what kind of god is he going to be? Does he have humanity at heart, or are they just peons and some means to an end? Because I don't know about you, but while many might just presume at face value that the Emperor is going to emerge as this benevolent champion, the avatar of humanity who will once and for all banish all of our enemies into oblivion, if we just look at his previous employment notes, it's not an unblemished glowing record, is it? I think it wouldn't be unreasonable to be concerned, at least, that the Emperor has some pretty morally questionable tendencies, and I wouldn't be completely shocked if he as a newly reborn warp god started just purging anybody who doesn't worship him completely and scouring millions of people from human planets, because let's face it, he's pretty much done that already once before. The Emperor who deployed his superhuman monstrosities to just scour entire worlds, who dared to even just resist joining the Imperium. Those who would not bow down and pledge their allegiance to the gigantic godlike Golden Emperor, just slaughtered. I mean, look at what happens in the Imperium with the Ecclesiarch in Sororitas as it is, their horrifying methods to purge heretics. So yeah, it's not unreasonable to consider that if Emperor 2 arrives, we might likely see that stuff scaled up significantly, as the Emperor has become a god of the warp. Even if he doesn't dictate that it has to happen, probably the Ecclesiarch is just going to go crazy and just start doing it left, right and centre. Or possibly the opposite, I suppose. Maybe there's going to be some immense outpouring of faith and worship and everything will be beautiful and happy. But I really don't think so. Now, I know that I'm going to get people now saying to me, you filthy heretic Luton, how dare you question the Emperor's glorious return to save us all? He was not some malevolent entity, you've got it so wrong. He didn't have cynical intentions for humanity. He'll be our saviour always. Well, I'm sorry, but it's just that somehow I find it hard to accept that with all the evidence to hand, plus the fact that the all-seeing, all-knowing master of mankind, who had seemingly benefited from one of his most powerful tools, his clarity of vision, until the final days of the crusade, but then was suddenly brain-fogged, leaving him gambling, unsure of what to do, ending up with this catastrophic clangor of being trapped on his golden life support throne, something just feels off about it. Of course, the easy, low-hanging fruit answer would be the Chaos Gods started getting very anxious that the Emperor might succeed. They threw everything at him, including obfuscating his vision, which always leads me to the thought of, okay, so why did the Emperor then not foresee that? Even without foresight, anybody could see that coming. The Emperor was not like the rest of ignorant humanity. He wasn't like his Primarchs. He knew before all the dangers and horrors which existed within the warp, and I'll restrain from straying off into discussing the nature of the warp and time in 40k and how causality could have been a complicating factor. But what are we being asked to believe here? That the Emperor of Mankind just didn't expect the Gods of Chaos to do anything? Especially considering that from what we are vaguely led to believe, he already perhaps had an encounter with the Gods in the past prior to his crusade. And we've covered this, but it doesn't seem to me that he really gained any power. The timelines don't line up on that. But he may well have gained some lost knowledge from the zenith of humanity, perhaps the ability to tether souls to his Primarchs, which seems particularly plausible considering the complexity of Magnus. And again, as I've discussed before, souls are a curious thing in 40k. Eldar souls, seemingly more persistent and malleable than humans. And some want to make the argument also that maybe the Emperor is some kind of tool left over from the golden age of humanity that has somehow crafted false visions of the past to cover up for his true existence as one of the godlike creations from the dark age of technology, but that perhaps he lacked knowledge to create true beings like himself. The Primarchs were the nearest he came to it, but to bring them into being at all, he still needed more from the warp. This is wild, wild speculation, and it's not without many, many holes in it as well. But it's still food for thought. But if we're thinking about the Chaos Gods and the Emperor, it comes back to that issue again of the Emperor rushing to complete the crusade, finish his great work. The Emperor was not just trying to wrap things up in a timely manner, he was pushing hard for the crusade to get done. Anyone would assume he was seemingly on a clock, evidenced by his aggressive, reckless, even, development of Astartes during the crusade, so much so that he genetically damaged them. And the impatience with worlds who took more convincing than others to be swayed into abandoning centuries or millennia of their own traditions and societal structures. It's always been this bone of contention. Was the Emperor deliberately distanced from the Astartes and the Primarchs, to whom he barely ever referred to as his sons? Were they just tools, or did he truly attempt to make something in his own image to the best of his ability? I think the answer, unsurprisingly, lies somewhere in the middle, the shades of grey answer. There's certainly nothing wrong with feeling attached to something you laboured to create, but at the same time the Emperor clearly has no qualms about making sacrifices of such things without the slightest hesitation. But if you really want to go off the rails, take a heavy in-fiction approach to it. When we consider that in M41, with 10,000 years since the Emperor supposedly walked among humanity, there are serious questions many could ask about did he exist at all. Seeing the Emperor through the eyes of humans of the Imperium in M41, how can they possibly know if he were real or not? A minuscule number of humans from the Galactic Imperial Empire will visit Terra in their lifetimes. Fewer, if any, would witness the palace, fewer still the Golden Throne, and any who did so would be slaughtered in psychic sacrifice. But on the more basic ground for humanity in M41, the Emperor exists as this unknowable figure. For many, he's an absolute central focus for their lives, but to others, a mythical legend that people speak of out among the stars, watching over us from Holy Terra. The planet itself is mythical. Citizenry likely wonder if this is a real place at all, or just something from stories and scripture. They'll never see it, they'll never see outside of their hive city districts. So is the Emperor a constructive, benevolent entity for humanity? Few who seem to have known him prior to his brutal wars of subjugation seem to think so. In fact, they nearly all abandoned him or attempted to stop his actions. Nearly all the immortal humans known as Perpetuals have any time for the Emperor. The custodians in Astartes who he created were in the first case literally genetically designed to obey him, and in the second heavily indoctrinated that it would take extreme actions to corrupt and turn them against him. He treated his warriors often demonstrably as a means to an end, a tool to get the job done. So is it fair or even reasonable to consider that the Emperor may in fact have had less than good intentions? Was he the true savior, just doing what had to be done because no one else would or could? A lone, uniquely powerful mortal who traversed all of human history, and after watching it avoid total destruction by a razor-thin margin for the last time, finally said, enough is enough. He emerges in the shadow of the fall from humanity's golden age and picked up the torch. The fact that this version is difficult to even solidly argue says enough on its own to me, especially when many rightly question, why did he not act prior to the fall of humanity if he were indeed always so powerful? Why did he not store a vast library of STC if he were all-knowing? The questions will just go on, and it's why it leads many to the conclusion that something is deeply amiss here. It's not a convincing picture, and there are critical pieces missing from the puzzle. Now, I will say, it is of course easy to paint the Emperor as being this apathetic super being who is looking at things on such a big picture level that his actions merely appear to be cold and indifferent to ordinary humans. I always think not entirely dissimilarly to Dr. Manhattan from Watchmen, where they're both so powerful, so transcendent, that they become disconnected from what it means to be an ordinary mortal human. This is honestly somewhat true for some, not all, of the Primarchs as well, and we've seen this even among the Astartes. Some understand the mortality of humans, others become entirely disconnected from it, which was incidentally one of the reasons some traitor Astartes turned away from humanity. They saw themselves as the next stage, and perhaps we might consider that this was in fact why the Emperor kept them at distance, treated them as a means to an end, because he didn't want to validate any of that kind of behaviour further. But maybe also because he didn't want to become too connected to something that he knew was going to have to ultimately be discarded, as he had done several times before. It's understandable how the Emperor could have become disconnected from the value and lives of individual humans when he has lived for such a massive period of time. If he did indeed emerge from the earliest days of mankind, by the time we reach M30, that's a lot of life to have lived and still keep things in perspective. One might see how his focus could become so grandiose and seemingly under a ticking clock of time pressure. At the same time, of course, it must be said that we have many instances where the Emperor appears genuinely heartfelt and considerate to ordinary humans. The Astartes also, many of them give considerable time, care and thought to the needs of ordinary human citizens. And you see this even with Gilliman in the newer material. Now, the cynical would perhaps say, well, in the Emperor's case, he was the man of a thousand faces. This was just another of his masterful misdirections. Well, perhaps, but it goes further. And this is what brings me back to my favourite vehicle for interesting storytelling, which is, of course, moral and ethical ambiguity. Now, just stepping out of the in-fiction world for a moment, we know that there are aspects of the law that can be relied upon. I usually qualify these as things that are widely seen and documented, and therefore we can say with reasonable certainty that they are a thing. This usually means equipment, factional organisation, planetary history, figures, battles, and so on. These are things so widely seen and continually documented and commented upon that we can consider them established. At the same time, however, there is so much in 40k that is open to interpretation, you can never be wholly certain, really, of anything. It's more we consider how much weight do we give something. If it's more visible, more common, then it's going to be more solid. Even if something is barely mentioned or only told through the lens of secondhand stories, dreams or visions, that makes it far more questionable as to its authenticity. One of the biggest issues when it comes to the warp and the chaos gods that I've touched on before is this idea of relative perspective, that is moral relativism. The idea that just because something is seen from one perspective as inherently abhorrent and immoral is only so when it is framed within the limited perspective of our own culture or time-based perspective. Now that's of course the abstract philosophical perspective. In reality, your average person understands that what actions we all know to be unacceptable because as humans who exist in society, our lives are shaped by morality, because it's a necessary framework to enable stable, constructive civilization. Of course, unfortunately, there are exceptions to the rule, which is why we have laws to enact upon those individuals who would carry out actions that are considered morally objectionable, abhorrent, indefensible. And yes, I need to pull this back some before I spin off into a discussion about the human condition, historically man's inhumanity to man, and where do we draw the lines for ourselves within different cultures, societies, and so on. It's an interesting area for discussion, but it can get pretty heavy, and we're of course thinking about this purely within the context of humanity in M41. Now, I came back to the start of this section to make a small amendment note to say that things get a little meandering from here. So, you know, buckle up. And yes, I used some movie references as well. So, is morality real? In the sense of, is it a real thing similar to how we would consider the laws of physics, given that it seems to passively dictate how most people in a society or a civilization function? Obviously, it's straightforward to understand that, no, this is not the case, when you see how anyone could break the unwritten rules of society, but this is only considering the very clear-cut examples. Somebody commits a murder, we think, okay, bad, except even something like that is on a sliding scale, isn't it? If someone's life is threatened, it can be seen as permissible to defend yourself. If we consider something like war, the idea that someone could go from doing a day job within normal society, then you're sent to a battlefield where you've shifted the boundaries of what is considered immoral. This, as a concept, is something most people tend to avoid thinking about, for obvious reasons. It's pretty heavy, and it leads to some fairly depressing conclusions. But even that in itself is something which has, of course, been heavily commented on historically. You have explorations of the human condition, questions around morality itself explored in movies like Apocalypse Now. Now, such examples are, of course, a very binary thing, but it's an easy example, because you're taking something that in normal everyday life is totally unacceptable, we have laws against it, and in some instances people might even use the adjective of evil to describe those who break through those boundaries. It's stranger, you can take that thing which is abhorrent in normal society, and as you transition to a different situation, suddenly not only is it considered acceptable, it's considered necessary, sanctioned even, something you could even be rewarded for. Now, I'm not here to debate the broader points of that argument, I simply wanted to make the pretty simplistic example that there exists not one, but multiple states of moral truth. And because people don't want their lives to be consumed, like I said, by pondering these very depressing philosophical concepts, it's not something that people generally invest a lot of time in. It is, though, why, for example, I personally feel that describing a person who has committed an undeniably horrific crime as evil is inherently unconstructive. It may be true and valid to ascribe such a description in an emotional sense, but it also can lead to a dismissiveness or collective unwillingness to face the conditions, reality, and circumstances that led to that event taking place at all, which ultimately means you are going to be less successful in understanding how you might be able to prevent that in the future. So in saying that person who did that thing is evil very often tends to lead to a sense that they were some kind of unstoppable force. This was a situation that was entirely unpreventable because evil. They were an evil person, a corrupted soul, a darkened force who existed outside the ordinary human condition. Nothing could ever have been done about it. Except very often that's just completely wrong. And even if it were somehow true in a specific circumstance, it's still not very constructive. And that sense of unconstructive or constructiveness for society and civilizations in a bigger, broader sense tends to be what often I see people deem as a solid marker for whether something is morally acceptable or not. Is it constructive in the bigger picture? Now, admittedly, it's not the singular gauge. There's other things like just established civility. But this idea of is it constructive in a broader sense tends to be, like I say, how people accept and allow actions that would be otherwise immoral to become moral. The problem, of course, is that what we may view as constructive tends to be subjective, which is why we're always endlessly arguing about such issues. So with that in mind, the 1979 movie Apocalypse Now, based upon the book Heart of Darkness, it's as good as any, perhaps, to make a point about the difficulty in interpreting morality and the issues raised by moral relativism. So it's of course always a gamble to take an analogy from a movie, not least a war movie, because people have very differing views. It relies on assuming people have seen it as well, and lastly people get really weirdly passionate about their opinions on movies, like really weirdly passionate. Especially when they're often very subjective with their themes and ideas, people seem to have this thing about really wanting to lock stuff down and being correct or not. I never really understand that, because people can have different opinions about one thing. It's fine. And war movies in general seem to attract a lot of heated debate, usually about if it's anti or pro-war. It seems to be the default thing. But in so doing, people often miss the point entirely, because whilst they're thinking about that, they're not thinking about how the fact that these things are very often a backdrop for a deeper exploration of humanity. The strange thing with war movies is they're often able to work at both a superficial and a much deeper philosophical level, which is why they can be so interesting. Similarly, Terrence Malick's Thin Red Line that I've talked about before. Sorry, I'm just imagining what kind of unlimited budget any cast war movie Denis Villeneuve would make. Anyway, Apocalypse Now is one of those films that has an interesting amount of ambiguity itself, in how it depicts and reveals to us different characters and realities. The character of relevance, obviously, is Colonel Kurtz. If you haven't seen the movie, heavy spoilers for the next minute or so. But for those of you who don't care at all about spoilers like me, Kurtz is this highly decorated US officer running a special forces team deep in the jungle of the Vietnam War. He basically goes rogue and disappears and becomes an embarrassing headache for the US military, who want to have him eliminated before things get even worse. Now that's just the very brief notes to his character. We discover Kurtz, who is a highly educated, thoughtful individual, has essentially had a complete mental breakdown as a result of his experiences. The trauma of war has reshaped his worldview, but it goes a lot deeper than this. Kurtz is such a deep thinker, he's highly philosophical, and because of his character and intelligence, has become completely mentally broken by his attempting to reconcile the incompatible moral positions of his military orders versus bearing witness to the consequences, further complicated by other experiences and atrocities. All of this demonstrate to him the unbreakable mental willpower required by those who stand and resist. Kurtz is brought to the conclusion that war cannot have any moral justification nor moral position to stand by, and in an attempt to search for something to replace this moral void, he uses his own willpower. But ultimately nothing can fill the void, and so he becomes consumed by the darkness, which is this realization that without any sense of moral order, all that can be is horror, destruction, chaos, much like the chaos in 40K, which is why by the end he famously speaks the phrase, "The horror, the horror." Kurtz is unable to make any sense of the complete destruction of morality that he has witnessed through the hypocritical, superficial morality of the military and their contradictory nature, that he can be authorized to commit brutal missions, even atrocities, but only if he's authorized to do so. This is ultimately what sends him over the edge. How can someone with an educated mind morally reconcile those two things? He makes the only conclusion that makes sense to him. To be clear, for Kurtz, it's not the acts of war and atrocity themselves that push him over the edge, it's the sheer absurdity of officials making a charade out of pretending what they're doing is not morally abhorrent. That brings Kurtz to the destructive realization that morality is not a real thing, it's just illusory. Because how can it make sense that one minute it's fine for him to be running these fully authorized campaigns of brutal horror, but the next minute if he's not been told to do so, then it's a crime? These two things are just, for him, at a moral level, fundamentally incompatible. A contributing factor, though, is also some of his experiences. He sees the sheer willpower of those that he is fighting against, and comes to this realization that it's not about being a good or a bad person. It's not about having love or hate or evil in your heart. It's about having that willpower. And that's essentially what he becomes, this vessel for willpower alone. There's a great line which underscores the insanity of the whole thing in the movie when we're reading through some of the reports that have been made by the military about Kurtz, where essentially it's explained that they still wanted to get him back on board despite how crazed and unhinged and out of control he'd become, because he was very efficient and very good at what he was doing. Which really underscores the horror of the whole situation, which is that despite the atrocities he's committing, they still want to get him back on board. It's not about morality, it's about whether they can control him or not. The annihilation of the self is so destructive in Kurtz that by the end he appears to have become so nihilistic he seems barely to care if he or anyone else lives or dies. Now I know this tangent seemed very way off the scheduled plan here, but I hope you can see that what I'm trying to say, how it's come to my mind anyway, is that when it comes to the Emperor, it's important that if we're considering what might come next for the Imperium and the galaxy, we understand him for who he is. That he's not an unstained, god. He has blood on his hands, billions of innocents. He's as flawed and problematic as the gods he seeks to destroy. For all we know, he could also be as broken and hollowed out as Colonel Kurtz. Given how the Emperor, similarly to Kurtz, has the propensity to disregard human life and commit mass destruction on the slightest pretext, I think it's genuinely possible that the Emperor long ago lost any real sense of morality at all. His visions for the future of humanity require, at least on some level, the acceptance that morality is illusory, as is already all too clear. For the Emperor, victory must come at any cost. And if there is not someone with the will to do so, then all will fall to darkness, to the horror. The problem, of course, is that the price has to be paid for by humanity. Now, I think admittedly today, things did go slightly more Luton than they needed to. I don't know what to tell you, unfortunately, it's just how my brain works. Things go round and round, and I consider something, then I come back to it a second, a third, a fourth time to try and find different angles to it. I think one thing we can all readily understand is that the Emperor is, of course, ambiguous, very much by design, to be this enigma, myth, or legend, a unifying symbol for humanity more than anything. So how about that initial main question from the start? Did the Emperor willingly walk into his own state of perpetual death, both knowingly and willingly, and if so, why? My position on that is, yes, I truly think he did. I may be wrong, of course. When will we find out? Who can say? But I think it honestly makes a lot of sense. One possibility that many believe and that I think remains absolutely plausible was that he was going to take humanity into his new webway project to starve the Chaos Gods and then for humanity to emerge later once the warp was pacified. But that if he found somehow the means to be reborn in the warp to take control of the warp itself, maybe all this would then not even be necessary. I also want to mention about the Emperor being worshipped by humanity for 10,000 years. It's deeply suspect that the Golden Throne and Astronomicon held such future-proofing capacity. And moreover, how do we know for certain that the sacrifice of Psykers were merely keeping him alive, allowing him to power the Astronomicon? Who really has set that in stone as a fact? No one really. If there's one thing we know about the Chaos Gods, it's that they're empowered by the emotions and the worship of humans and also devour their souls from the warp. So it's not much of a stretch to see how the Emperor could have been doing the same for the past 10,000 years, and that now it's finally bearing fruit. The Emperor may well be coalescing in the warp as the Star Child. And I just want to remind you again of the actions of the Emperor, denying his divinity, dressing as a gold giant, and all the other less than subtle actions. He was either laying it on so thick that no one would believe someone could be so blatant and then outright deny it. And I was going to make a counterpoint to that here, but I genuinely couldn't think of a reason why someone would brutally subjugate humanity to become the supreme leader of a people who that said person is more than well aware that they have historically had a very, very difficult time not worshipping divine beings or heavily reading into things that are not there. And then that same said person who appears to be able to at will appear in different forms specifically chooses an outfit for themselves as a giant bathed in light, dressed all in gold, who goes around carrying out miracles with one hand and an army of superhuman warriors to enact his immense wrath with the other, all the while specifically telling everyone that you're definitely not a god. Yeah, definitely nothing was going to go wrong with that plan. Certainly no one could see it coming that the highly susceptible, extremely easily manipulated human race were not going to nod and wink themselves into becoming insanely devout worshippers of the giant golden immortal man who really, really looks like a god, acts like a god, and has the powers of a god. So I do think that yes, the Emperor knowingly planned his fall. I think that much like the Amalathians at this point, he knows exactly what he was doing, and that his 10,000 year plan is coming to fruition. He could not destroy the gods of chaos from the material realm, and so he must battle them in their own domain, on their own terms. The only plausible way for that to happen is to enter that space himself, using the collective worship and power of humanity to fuel him. The big question remains though, are the Emperor's intentions for humanity morally sound or not? Will all the sacrifices and suffering balance in the bigger picture for humanity and the Imperium? These are the questions that we cannot answer. The Emperor's agenda, his ultimate purpose, are very unclear. And who knows what could have happened to him through that 10,000 years? If he does emerge as a god, what kind of god will he be, as we discussed before? It could be the dawn of a new golden age for humanity, but it could also be a new age of fear and zealotry, of worship, and in a very strange way, galactic domination by a new power of the warp. One small other thing. It always seemed somewhat unbelievable, some might say suspiciously unbelievable to me, that the Emperor could have been so crippled by Horus. We of course know that Horus was the captain planet of Chaos at that specific moment in time, using their powers combined to become the warp's greatest champion. But the fact that the Emperor was still able to not just finish him, but literally erase him from existence, I think it showed he had more than enough left in him to do something that is barely known to have happened at any other time. Now, of course, it's also said that maybe the Chaos Gods saw Horus slipping, they knew it was better to get him out of the way, and at that moment realized it was time enough to pull back their power, thus enabling the Emperor to finally kill him. Although I also often consider, what if the Chaos Gods had that moment of realization? What if the Gods of the Warp had been lulled into being drawn into the Emperor's trap, and at that last moment realized what was happening and pulled back? Maybe they saw what the Cabal saw, that victory for Horus meant their own impending annihilation. Soon, we hope to get some information on one of the most fundamental questions in 40k, which is how did the final battle with the Emperor and Horus play out? And we do need some clarity, because there are conflicting accounts from the older and later elements of the lore here. These may well speak to the nature of the Emperor for us. Did the Emperor hold back from destroying Horus because he was one of his Primarch sons, and only when he saw Horus's clear and complete corruption was he able to destroy him fully? That idea conflicts with this picture we have built of the Emperor barely speaking about his Primarchs as sons and seeing them more as tools to complete just a stage of his grand vision, that potentially they may have even been discarded later. There's of course that description in the older lore where the Emperor, quote, forces all mercy and compassion from his mind, empties it of all knowledge and friendship and camaraderie and love, his eyes lock with Horus and sees understanding there. Then with full cold knowledge of what he's doing, the Emperor destroys the Warmaster. It doesn't sound a lot like the Emperor we know to me. What's interesting about that is that we could believe that at the end of the final battle of the Heresy, that moment with Horus was what brought about a major change in the character of the Emperor, and that this was then further whittled down and spiritually emaciated over 10,000 years, so that by the time Gilliman visits with him on Terra in M41, it's understandable that what he sees is something completely unrecognizable as his air quotes father. My honest opinion, I think the way the scraps of information are coming together, it does appear that perhaps things are moving towards this situation where the Emperor is going to be reborn in the warp itself, and I should remind, this doesn't mean he's going to be trapped there forever either. The Eldar gods were able to seemingly walk in and out of the material and immaterial space. Although I imagine what could happen is some kind of situation where the Emperor remains in the warp and becomes a part of the great game. He speaks to the mortal humans back in reality through the use of avatars and heralds, prophets speaking on his behalf, while he maintains his attention on the war in the warp, fueled by the faith and worship of a galaxy of human followers. Or it could be more cataclysmic. It could be some kind of event where, in a short time, the Emperor does re-emerge and fights a massive battle to calm the warp. What if the Emperor allied with the Eldari and combined with Inayad to lead some kind of ultimate battle to destroy the Chaos Gods, and when all was said and done, the Necrons sweep in, use their Blackstone to seal the rift, bringing some semblance of normalcy back to the galaxy? But I don't think so. I think in truth these wild speculations will never be realised, nor will they happen anytime soon. I actually question if in terms of lore, we would see the rebirth of the Emperor in my lifetime. I'm not joking, I'm completely serious. The lore of 40k moves so slowly, I might actually not be here to see it happen. What I do think, though, is that things are leaning toward the Emperor coalescing in the warp, and who knows how long that's going to take. I think from the descriptions and visions people are having across the Imperium, the Emperor's tarot becoming stronger, more accurate, the Sororitas seemingly having their powers more than they ever did, this may well start to begin answering that other frustrating question I've asked a while back of how do the Sororitas powers work? If they're not psychers, I think the answer is they sort of, like the Orcs, have some means by which to directly channel the Emperor's power from the warp using their faith. So that if, for example, they're in a null zone like the Pariah Nexus, somehow they can still utilize it, even when psychers cannot. And now that we know what's happening sort of with the Emperor and the warp, that makes more sense. I think this situation of the emergent new man, this coalescing Emperor, the Star Child, is what will become the situation for some time. There always remains this question of, if the Emperor is not on the Golden Throne, well then, what happens there? I think it's pretty straightforward, actually, and I think this goes toward the case for the Emperor actually having foreseen all the things that would come to pass, and why they unfolded as they did. I think he definitely wanted the Imperium to become hyper-religious, to fuel him as a god. I think he knew why that was necessary. I think he saw this critical time that would see an explosion in the number of human psychers, this psychic awakening, and because of that, I think the designs of things like the Golden Throne and the Astronomicon were made to accommodate this increase of psychers, so that when the time came, the Emperor could actually leave and be reborn, and the systems ensure that the Golden Throne is maintained, the security of Terra is safe, the Astronomicon continued to function, likely still somehow tethered to the Emperor, but being fueled by more psychers than ever before. I do wish things, as always, were a little more clear-cut at this point, so I didn't have to wildly speculate and guess quite so much, and who knows if I'm even close to being right about any of this stuff. But in my head right now, this is what seems to make the most logical sense. I never really bought this idea of escaping into the Webway. We never got enough information about how that was really going to solve anything, other than yes, maybe starving chaos very slowly. Seems quite a project, doesn't it? Shifting all of humanity in some galactic exodus into the Webway. If you ever move house, it takes a long time, it's a lot of effort. So the idea of moving a galaxy of humanity into the Webway, it's the most insanely complicated logistical nightmare ever. Unless, of course, the answer to it was more dark than we anticipated. Maybe the Emperor's Webway plan was not to bring humanity there and secure it safely away. Maybe what he was going to do was just select a few billion humans, maybe just the Psykers and his custodians, and disappear into the Webway with them forever, leaving the Astartes and regular humans to deal with whatever was left out in the galaxy. And then over time, once he's built up some kind of psychic empire, emerge and wage like some new war. Who knows? But for now at least, I'm pretty firmly on the emergent Starchild Emperor train. It's the thing which has been given the most nods to. It also makes a lot of sense in the grand scheme of things. It aligns with what we've been seeing, it aligns with the events and the fact that the Imperium is facing its most destructive situation since the Heresy in the form of the Great Rift. So it seems right that now is the time the Emperor would begin to reappear, and despite not being fully present, at least begin to exert his influence, and this is demonstrably happening. We've seen it in things like Dark Imperium, it's happening so visibly that even Gilliman is starting to have second thoughts. But anyway, that's where we are. Disagree? Have a better theory? Tell me in the comments below. I think a good time to revisit this would be after the conclusion to the Siege of Terra series, dependent on if it gives some new solid insights. But I think to conclude, we'll consider that something which has always been a bit of an eye-roll statement. The Emperor protects. Something the brainwashed faithful of the Imperium would just say offhand because they've been saying it all their lives. But right now, in M41, with the increasing power and presence of the Emperor in the dreams, visions, even lives of the faithful, the servants of the Imperium, the preachers who would walk unarmed into battle against the nightmares of chaos and somehow emerge untouched, now at this most devastating of times in M41, this period of true darkness for the Imperium, the Emperor actually does protect.